Hello, this is Mark Knopfler here. In the studio, we're going to be playing stuff from my solo record, which is called Kill to Get Crimson.
I certainly appreciate the opportunity. It's always a pleasure indeed to have this opportunity to chat with you. And
it's always nice to talk to you, too.
Thank you. You haven't been playing stuntman on your motorbike lately again, have you?
No, I'm still biking, though. I'm still interested in biking. I think it's still one of the best activities out there.
But I did see a small rendering of the cover, and it looks like there's a scooter, a motorbike rendering in there somewhere.
The scooters. Oh, we're talking scooters now. But the interesting thing is, I just bought a scooter. I've been riding around. It's great for London. It's a red scooter, and it's a pretty topical thing. You know, I mean, there's a lot of them around these days. When you look at this painting, these scooters were painted in 1958. They've got learner plates on them, and they're pretty much exactly the same as they are. As they were then, now, you know, they were the really hot thing to have back then in 58, 59. And there's a girl who wants to buy one in the painting, and her mum's there, and her grandmum's there, her grandma's there, and they're not so sure about it at all.
Well, some things haven't changed.
That's right. I remember running into opposition with my parents when I wanted to get a bike. And it's the same thing, you know.
That's right.
What do you want? You want something like a red motorcycle, and you want a red guitar.
Or a red guitar. That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those things haven't changed either.
They haven't changed either.
No.
And then I hope that the guy who sold the guitar to him just told him to stick at it, because that's what the old guy said to me. Coming out of the shop, he said, stick at it.
Well, we should send him a platinum album, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that shoulder do on tour last year with 25 pounds of guitar hanging off of it?
Oh, it's easy. And they actually heal up quicker than... And they heal up stronger than they were before.
Ah.
That's a good thing about that. And I was actually pretty fit at the time of the accident. So even though there were a few broken bones, I was out of hospital in a couple of days. I mean, I just really just... left.
You were just showing off.
In a couple of days.
You were just showing off.
Well, it was just I preferred the food at home apart from anything else. I had to be careful about laughing. I couldn't, with the kids, you know, you and friends and stuff, you just really got to be careful about laughing. If you ever had broken ribs.
No, I think I'll pass.
Try. Yeah. You got to watch the laughter bit.
And I'm told you never want to sneeze, right?
Right. Now, a sneeze is certainly an event.
An event. Oh, the neighbors know. Everybody in a four-county area knows, yes. Okay. Let's start with the title. Where does this come from? Kill to Get Crimson.
Well, they're just words that I put into the mouth of one of the characters in the song Let It All Go, and... the character is an old artist, and there's a young guy that wants to do it too, and the old guy's saying to him, don't do this, go and get a job, you know, let it all go, and, you know, he said it's... And by the end of the song, he's saying, well, look, if you really must do it, then you've got to let it all go. And so the let it all go takes on a slightly different meaning. But what he says to the kid is, I'd kill to get crimson on this palette knife. And I suppose for me, I wouldn't have killed. I was pretty desperate to get hold of a red guitar, the same thing. That's just, you know, I get songs from all over the place. That was really from... just from some reading I was doing, and one or two coincidences and things falling into place, and lo and behold, there's a song. Yeah, that's just one of the characters in one of the songs.
The scaffold is white, driving out of the yard, with a face that's as hard as a scaffolder's bar. When she goes into town, she might take the top down on the car. the quick little steps in the stiletto boots and the hair with the roots. She comes in as a rule to get the nails done and the tan for the sun when the kids are in school. Don't begrudge her the mark, it's been nothing but a work in a hard life, losing her looks over company books, the scaffolder's wife. Wicked old days when they went it alone, kept the company going on a wing and a prayer. They don't pay what they owe when they have the cash flow. They don't care. Don't begrudge her the mark, it's been nothing but a word in a hard life, losing her looks over company books, the scaffold is wide. The scaffold is wide.
Overall, one of the things that struck me about the songs on Crimson is how populist the themes and the characters are, such as the scaffolder's wife. Here's a line, losing her looks over company books. Now, you've told me in previous interviews, you know, where you come from, the Detford days, but your ship came in more than 20 years ago. How difficult has it been to be able to see the world through the eyes of a working class man or woman and stay connected to that reality that you came from?
Well, I don't know whether you do. I don't know whether you really successfully or fully do. I think you tend to. I'm not sure that you do. You can only try. You can only try. I've always been able to switch gears pretty easily. I don't have withdrawal symptoms from touring or whatever. I tend to get back into whatever other mode that I'm in. And you come back from being in big hotels around the world to in a little cafe someplace, and I've always found it easy to make adjustments. I don't sit there staring at the wall or coming down from, different work experiences. I just tend to move straight pretty easily from one situation to the next. But as far as, with the Sultans of Swing situation where it's just a dingy little pub in Deptford, you know, the fact is that you're not spending as much time in those places, and so you're dead right. But hopefully you'll be right in something else. Yeah, you'll be right in something else, and you know, you'll hopefully be just squeezing up the world, and the sponge will be in there, and you'll squeeze it out, and something of your own will emerge.
What devices do you employ, for instance, to write a narrative so vividly, like The Scaffolder's Wife? It's like a screenplay. I'm serious. Do you disguise yourself for a weekend to just observe people? Or for instance, it just occurred to me, you have not, over the course of your career, either with Dire Straits or with your solo career, you haven't plastered your mug on your album covers. Has that been a conscious decision so that you can have, so that you can move in society and have a private life?
Well, I certainly try to, and I certainly try to do that in England. I try not to do too much TV and that kind of thing in England, just to make life a little easier. But really, overall, people are great, and they just, and I find that I can get on and move about and do things, and I think a lot of it's to do with just the way that you are, you know, the way that you carry yourself about the place, you know.
I mean, go on. Well, I was just going to say, for instance, you've sold over 100 million albums worldwide, and yet I wouldn't have any hesitation with taking Mark Knopfler out to lunch anywhere in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I think we could probably go out in public, have lunch, and I doubt that anybody would bother you.
Oh, well, that would be good. I'd look forward to that. I'm going to hold you to that, Redbeard. Well, what are you going to order?
Probably barbecue.
Yeah, my three favorite letters. BBQ.
but seriously, my point being that doesn't happen by accident, that you can have that duality of incredible success and retain that kind of anonymity on your terms.
Well, you try to. That's what we're all trying to do, isn't it? We're trying to control things, our own lives as best we possibly can. And
but I guess the point—it's
a bit of a tiptoe through the tulips, I suppose.
How that affects your ability in the creative process—that's really not only is it a luxury for you personally, but that allows you, I would think, to move in and out of real life, the mainstream of real life, and continue to write narratives like The Scaffolder's Wife. I think that's really a blessing that a lot of other performers are cursed with, a fame that probably inhibits their creative ability too.
Well, I think yes and no. I think everybody can really wonder about if they want to. I don't think there's anything particularly special about it, and I think that the subject matter is there to be seen if you only just look. It's just there, and it's just in life, and it doesn't happen all the time, but every now and again you'll just have an idea. I just try to stay awake to it, probably a little bit more awake than I have been over the years. I think a lot of the time is if you're too busy caught up in life, and I think that just really applies to anything. If you're chasing after or whatever it is you're chasing after, and you're fast laning life all the time, then it's possible that you're going to miss certain things. That's just going to be a fact. if you're touring in an aeroplane, then hey, you're going to miss things that are on the ground. And if you're in a plane, you're going to miss things that are on the ground. And that's just the way that it is. But the thing then was looking for something else. And, you know, provided you stay awake to life and you embrace life and, you know, you've got something going on with your life, or you're listening to things or you're reading things, and things, this stuff happens. And stuff happens, to me anyway, creatively. I can't really speak for other artists, because people work differently from each other.
Overall, what did you come away with from the road-running Grammy-nominated album and tour with Emmylou Harris last year?
Well, it was great working with Emmy, obviously, and we were having so much fun recording that we thought we'd have a little tour as well. And that, it was good for this album, because it drew the bowstring back on it, and it made me want to get on with it. And I had these songs waiting to be recorded, and I was finishing up with these songs, writing them and playing around with them while I was out with Emmylou. And when I got back at the end of the tour, I was more than ready. In fact, I've got a lot of stuff that I'd like to be getting on with, and it just feels like a very good time for me to be doing this, yeah. There's nothing I like more than to be wrestling with these tunes. It's a great privilege. It's not always the easiest thing, job in the world. It's not always, doesn't always happen, but it's something that you realize that you ought to be doing it. And I've had a little bit of time, I suppose, and having my own place to work in has made a huge difference.
Well, that you just anticipated my next question. How do you think?
Oh, did I? I'm sorry.
Well, no, don't apologize. No, you're going right with me. How do you think having your own recording studio has affected your methods of composing and arranging and making creative decisions?
Well, I don't write songs in the studio. I write them at home, or I write them in hotels if I'm touring or traveling. I just write them where I happen to be. But the studio's been a great friend, or really from the get-go. And I never really thought it would. I've been meaning to do it for a long time, but I never realized. I'm so slow with everything that I never realized just how important it would be. And it's interesting, actually, to me, because at a time when anybody with any intelligence is closing their studios and, they tend to be run as commercial enterprises, and you can understand why some studios would be finding it tough. But I suppose the studio for me is just something I feel very fortunate to have, to be able to have it. And I've found that actually what's been happening is, as other studios like it have been closing up, and quite a lot of people seem to want to come and record here, and without ever advertising the place, it's great.
The first time I ever remember the importance, the clear cause and effect of a brilliant musician composer in his own creative facility without any constraints of time or money was Jimi Hendrix in the album Electric Ladyland, which was so dramatically different than his first two albums. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do. I do remember that. And Electric Ladyland was just across the street from a friend of mine who's got a guitar store in New York. And actually, we went in there and did a little bit of work in there too, yes. And it was, that was also, was an intensely creative time. In fact, this record itself, Kill to Get Crimson, is really, I'm just sitting here looking at it now. It deals with a very exciting time, and I try not to deal with it nostalgically. It's not really about nostalgia. It's about something else. It was a very dynamic and interesting time. When, in fact, a red scooter would be as modern as I think somebody said that the guy who actually painted this picture was as modern as Damien Hirst, was as hip as Damien Hirst, right in, as now, you know, at that time. And then, of course, a year or so later, he was superseded by another movement of people that painted pictures with circles and lines. But it was an incredibly exciting time, and not just in music, but in all sorts of things. But the rock and roll scene was very, 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 for me, was of course the kingpin in the whole thing. But I was just a kid sitting, doodling and dreaming, you know, drawing guitars and motorcycles and dreaming my dreams.
You can tell me your troubles, I'll listen for free. Regulars trust me, it seems. You can come and see Uncle to get through the week. Leave your pledges with me to redeem. Some folks sell their bodies for 10 bob a go. Politicians go pawning their souls, which doesn't make me look too bad, don't you know? Me with my heart full of holes. All my yesterday's broken, a watch with no face, all battered and old. Bits of the movement all over the place, and a heart full of holes, a heart full of holes, a heart full of holes, a heart full of holes. Brass knuckles and banjos are out on the town, at the knees up in Teddy Boy's Road. The gold block and tackle tells the time upside down. Rock and roll, well I don't know. Dead people's wedding gifts walk out the door. A clarinet squeals to be free. Accordions hop from the shelves to the floor. Start playing their polkas to me. There's a ringing of bells, a dunderhead's curse. Fingers are pointing at you, and you take work in hell, be glad it's not worse. And you get to the back of the queue. Handcuffs and hunting knives clang on the bars. Air pistols shoot out the light. Guitars can shatter the windows down Brick Lane tonight. If one of us dies, love, I think I'll retire. See my boys and my beautiful girls. Garden of Eden, no gates or barbed wire. Who knows, maybe gates made of pearls. Well, if we go to heaven, and some say we don't, but if there's a reckoning day, please God I'll see you, and maybe I won't have a backpack to go either way. Dear, I'll keep it for you. It's not gonna go anywhere. But your soul, that is not what I do. There's not a lot I can do there. I remember the officers watching my hand. Repair it or die, I was told. It's a wonder to me, I still don't understand why I ever survived to be old with a heart full of home. Heart full of homes. A heart full of homes.
I spend an inordinate amount of time looking at things, still looking at guitars and motorcycles. You know, and it's the same. It's the kid bit that doesn't really want to grow up. Yeah, so I think that the things that reverberate with that part of your youth will always. Let's hope that they always do. It means that bit of you is always alive.
Yeah.
I mean, I suppose when if I go past a store with instruments in it, you know, guitars, and I find myself going in and just looking in the window because it's what I've done all my life. Who does it hurt?
Well, not only that, but actually it kind of shows that your bank balance and your postal code doesn't really change who you are.
Well, that's completely correct.
Yeah,
that's right.
Are we still seeing in this album some of the cathartic revelations that you came upon recuperating during your accident?
No, I don't think so. But you could have something there. But I've never really detected anything about that. I just, I certainly don't. I try to respect what the talent that I've got, and I try not to stay away from songwriting too long. You know, I just try and stay with it now. And hopefully, as far as the playing's concerned, I'll try and keep my hand in there as well. And, you know, because it covers such a huge universe of stuff, because, you know, doing simple things has its own complications, and doing more complicated things... also, so it's a wonderful world of music and song out there, and I'm just very glad to be able to play a small part in it.
I'm sorry, I got to follow that up. Doing simple things has its own complications. Could you expand on that, please? I don't know if I.
Well, very
that.
Often, very often you think, you know, that something that you've written, which is pretty straightforward, is going to be pretty straightforward to record, and how wrong you can be so often. It's not an easy thing to record. In fact, all I really want to do is make a couple of good records. There's nothing else that I really want to do.
They're driving long nails into coffins. You've been having sleepless nights. You've gone as quiet as a church mouse, checking on your rights. The bus has hung you out to dry, and it looks as though we'll punish the monkey, let the organ grinder go. talking to a lawyer. Are you gonna pretend that you and your employer are still the best of friends? Somebody's gonna take the fall as you quit pro quo and punish the monkey. Punish the monkey, yeah. Punish the monkey. And let the open wider go on. Here comes a policeman. He won't be sidetracked. He's asking about a smoking gun. He's after the man.
Punish the monkey. You must give me the backstory on this song. You know, you're probably going to start seeing T-shirts with that phrase, right? I hope you have the copyright.
Oh well, yeah. Well, there is, you know, there is an expression of punish the monkey, and they're going to punish the monkey and let the organ grinder go. And you know, that's just something. I suppose it's been happening around the world. In different, you know, in different shapes and forms, and this is just something. It's just a general observation, you know, no less, no more. It's a song, but you know, there's been quite a lot of very newsworthy things going on. In fact, in both of our countries, you know, different issues. And people are looking to see who's going to take responsibility or be responsible or act responsibly, you know. And I suppose one of the features of modern life is that there's sort of an increase in cynicism on the part of the man in the street. And in terms of all of those things, you know, particularly when he sees the erosion of certain things that used to be there, in his life, like his pension, for instance, or any one of a number of other things. And he is the guy who is becoming more cynical, and he's the kind of guy who is saying things like that. Man, they're just going to punish the monkey. You bet, you watch. So it's really just a reflection of that. It's excellent that so many musicians are influenced by roots music, but you know, I was playing roots music with, and I was playing you know, black and white roots music from a very early age, really, from the late teens, it's always been a part of the music. It's always really been there. It's just probably I found myself writing more for string bass and instruments like that, and hearing all those sounds. I think any good writer, and be like the guys you're talking about, you know, and people like Bob Dylan and Neil Young and so on and so forth, the depth in the writing comes from loving roots music. And it's just, I think it's always really been there. But I suppose I'm doing, on Kill to Get Crimson, there's probably a fair bit of that folk influence because I was so influenced by it as a kid. I wouldn't be at all surprised. I mean, that's how you all start, you know, a lot of kids start to learn to play. And you know what you realize as you play music is that it's all from that. All the music that, I mean, sophisticated, what they call sophisticated music, or even more involved pop music, or ensemble music, jazz, and so on and so forth. It really all comes from folk music. We're all basically folk musicians. Different degrees, and even if you're playing something rather complex at Carnegie Hall, you're still essentially playing folk music.
You're right, of course. Phone and internet wireless companies keep telling us that we're more connected now than ever before. Yet, have you noticed you do more and more things alone? And listening to recorded music used to be a shared thing. Two or more people in the same space would listen to music together. Not anymore. It's your own personal music in your own personal headphones. No sharing. It's isolated. Or you just sit, at your own computer and consume music. Yet I see more people than ever craving real songwriters of substance, playing real instruments, invoking real emotions by really singing. Have you noticed?
Yes,
that?
It's a good thing to absolutely. Yeah, it's a good thing to talk about. It's easy to talk about it too. I mean, it's easy to see. You can see it everywhere. The headphone, and the iPod. But it's stuff that these things are aspects of music that are drawing more people into music, and it's not good. There's nobody's getting hurt with it. That's okay. Oh, one of the great pleasures of life, though, is touring and playing music in after a show and getting together with guys and you're playing each other different things that you've got with you, and that's just a real and enjoyable side to life. That communal thing with music and. Certainly, the point that you're making about live music has never been more popular than now. And maybe it is, with the artifice of all this bubblegum that, has always been there, but it seems to be a pretty hefty factor in the scene now. Maybe audiences are looking for something real that they can get from people who can actually get up there and do it. And that's always that the fact that live music is so popular is something I think that everybody can be thankful for.
It seems that the more and more high tech that we get,
it seems that that the pendulum also demands that we have more like a high touch, that we crave more, you know, more things with a little more soul, maybe.
Yeah, have you noticed as well how often, how every few years there's a, what they call it, you know, the journalist has to call it something, they call it a folk boom or a blues boom or a whatever, and every few years there will be one, and I think that's the reason. It's a little pendulum action, that's all that's happening. Well, we don't have synths on the, you know, I didn't use synths, and it's so in that sense it's quite straightforward. It's all it's fairly stripped down, and it has the influences that I like, that are sort of up my alley, those kind of roots influences, and hopefully I'm not wallowing in too much nostalgia, and I'm just trying to make something that I want to hear. I'm just trying to satisfy myself, and then when in doing that, if I can make other people happy, that's all right with me.
We're old enough for leaving home, the old Joanna and the old trombone. It's all going on, I'm growing my sideboards long. Hey, you and me can be who we want to be. Listen out, right here, it's gonna be a beautiful year. Calling it a teenage scene, and I have a dream. Don't know if I'll be a star, but I'm gonna play guitar. I've seen this rocking cat, oh, I wanna be just like that. Listen out, right here, it's gonna be a beautiful year. Look at you, baby, tell your daddy you're no child. Look at you, baby, we can get one.
can get wild. You once told me how influential Albert Ammon's New Orleans Boogie Woogie piano music was to your early Dire Straits composing and playing. Where did the haunting sounds of the guitar and Vox organ that we hear on We Can Get Wild, where did that first impress you? And what about them elicit such powerful emotions in us today?
Yeah, well, it's beat group stuff, isn't it? The beat group. I mean, the whole thing of being a teenager, for those teenage things, the teenagers have got all the dangerous things. They've got the motorcycle. They got the money. They're earning their own money now. In fact, the teenager didn't even exist until this time. The young people started working, and they wanted their own clothes, and they wanted their own everything. And they went out there and they got it, and they wanted their own music too. And so that was the idea, that you didn't have to, if you were a girl, you didn't have to wear a twin set in pearls and tweeds and you didn't have to get married. You know, there was that idea of if you lived together, you had to get married and all of that. So there was a sexual revolution, and there was all sorts of and a music revolution and everything all going on, and it was great. But it was just happening beyond my reach, of course. And being my, I was just too young. But you could sort of observe it all and sort of think, wow, I'd love to have a pair of a Cuban heel winkle picker boot. You see, now there's an object for, you know, or a Vox Continental organ, you know, that makes that sound, you know. Mm. The House of the Rising Sun by the Animals. Okay. There's a beat group record for you.
Or Chris Montez, Let's Dance.
Yeah, Let's Dance. You know, there you go. You bang on it, you know. And so that time, it's the excitement of that time partly that fuels songs like that.
But when I hear We Can Get Wild, immediately I turn into an adolescent and I start scanning the horizon at dusk.
Right. Right. And you're envious of the, you know, when you're a certain age, you see the guy next door getting ready for going out on a date, you know, and you're just too young. But you kind of want to be a part of that. Or the guy with the, you probably saw guys with Corvettes.
Yeah.
You know, or a guy with a Mustang that you see.
Absolutely.
Or a guy with a Harley, an XR 750. You think, man. Or a Triumph.
Triumph.
Yeah. Let's get to 1966. Let's talk about a Triumph, a Bonneville TT special, you know. And you think I want one.
I sure did.
And of course, and you're in. You know, that never changes from there, does it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've had it. The desires that are stoked in childhood, you know, they continue to, you know, they then create the impetus for the wheels to actually go around and keep going around. You know, if you want to be involved in these things. Eventually, you make a life in these things, and you know, you surround yourself with those things. That's what shapes your life, and it's great. Yeah. It's not it shouldn't be obsessive, and it should never become psychotic.
No,
that's the thing.
No, of course.
Sunday morning, here we are. The boys come home. Not quite the movie star. He's been in Hollywood. The boys come home. The boy's done good. He says she has too high a price, neglecting to declare. Between them there on ice, chill with the fizzy and the still. He tried but didn't make it there. It's not for me. It's not for me. busy and the still. He tried but didn't make it there. It's not for me. Not for me. Sunday papers, here we are. The boys come home. Come
Mark Knopfler's album Kill to Get Crimson, that's The Sublime, The Fizzy, and The Still.
You know, Mark, you got to be real confident and real good with that there guitar to call your song The Fizzy and The Still.
Well,
who first used that wide, wet, twangy tremolo guitar back in the 50s that still just knocks me out? Where did you first hear
it? Yeah, well, that's the first. I first heard that really was probably, it was either, I don't know whether it was The Shadows or, but it would really be Duane Eddy for me, probably. I do remember when I was small that Duane Eddy's Because They're Young was one of those big records of the time. And as a little kid up the street had a copy of it on a 45 and, man, I went round there. I made him play it so many times. He must have thought I was slightly weird. And I probably was. I mean, I think you've got to be slightly obsessed. And just the sound of, you know, the sound of it. If you listen to The Shadows' Wonderful Land or, you know, the first few notes of Atlantis, for instance. You know, it's just a... And I would be the kid... at the back of the class, twanging, making that noise, you know, with, you know, vocally,
yeah,
trying
with
to make
your
that
mouth.
Sound,
yeah, exactly.
Danging away with my mouth,
exactly.
And I remember, you know, one of the teachers would say, "Nofra, stop making that, yeah, boy, stop making that metallic sound at the back of your throat, boy."
Duane Eddy was definitely the one I've got written down here. That was the one.
Yeah, Duane was a big one.
Oh, yeah.
The Shads, but The Shadows were very big, you see, in England. And,
right.
And so a lot of English kids, you know, just really knew that. But, of course, they knew Duane, too. And so, yes, it was a thrill to actually meet Duane.
Wow.
And, you know, there were other guitarists that, for instance, there was James Burton played for Rick, you know, for Ricky Nelson, and Rick Nelson was Ricky Nelson.
Right, right.
And that was another one. And of course, there were the guitarists that played on all of those. There was Scotty Moore, and there were the guitarists that played on all those sessions with the Everlys and so on and so forth. So generally speaking... the kids of my age absorbed that and fell in love with that kind of twang. And when I play normally, I don't... a lot of the time when I'm playing, I'm not really after that. It's another kind of playing. But I love to pick up a pick and you know, you use the tremolo arm or what you call the whammy bar in the States, and... You call it the whammy bar.
Yes,
and you play
they do.
A different way. And the vibrato on the note doesn't come from the left hand on the neck. It comes from the bar. And you've still got to have the right kind of action for that to make the kind of sound. So, but it's just, I don't know, this is just the juvenile stuff. That, you know, this is the land that I live in.
we're the beneficiaries of it.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you.
When it's pop goes the weasel, let go of the easel. You don't want this rickety, raggedy life. It's seat of the trousers, it's all sink or swim, son. A kill to get crimson on this palette knife. And I'd steal in a minute, I'm up to hearing it. You here behaving as though I'm a saint. Get a job with a pension, don't ever mention you once had a craving for the brushes and paint. So go, forget it, let it all go, let it all go. Go, forget it, let it all go. Forget it, let it all go, let it all go. Go, forget it, let it all go, let it all go. Rider judges my swipes and my smudges. He doesn't like pictures with blotches and blots. The drawing room tea set was horses, sunsets, sweet nothings, the seaside with yachts. It's the end of the 30s, no time for arties. Over in Poland, a ride all to do. Join the Navy, the Air Force and the Army. They'll all be enrolling young fellas like you. So go, forget it, let it all go, let it all go. Go, forget it, let it all go. Decisions, flaming visions, ringing expressions, a clamoring voice. It's volcanic desire, unquenchable fire. It isn't a question of having a choice. Anyway, now I'm old, but if you won't be told, you've been created to answer the call. Passion and lust is gonna end in the dust, but you hang on some government gallery. You must go, forget it, let it all go, let it all go. Go, forget it, let it all go. Go, forget it. Let it all go, let it all go.
I'm Redbeard. Gotta go fire up a mid-year Corvette and put the top down. Then I'll be back in the studio after that. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking Mark Knopfler for his insights into his music. Special thanks this time to Julie Muncy of Warner Brothers Records. You can visit www.inthestudio.net for this and your other favorite interviews. In the Studio was written this edition by yours truly, Redbeard. Transcription by Jane Carpenter. Theme song by Andy Timmons. In the Studio is produced by Barbarossa Limited, copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Be a part of the In the Studio network, www.inthestudio.net.